What is going on, everybody? Welcome to A Theology of Hustle. I'm your host, Curry Blandford, and today I'm talking to Nicole Taylor. So I met Nicole through a recent interview that I've done with Greg Busick. He sent Nicole's info over to me and was like, you have to interview Nicole. She's amazing. She's doing amazing work. And so I'm always down for talking foster care. You know, that's something very near and dear to my heart. And I just loved Nicole's story so much. She has an amazing story of what sort of brought her into this space. She's the executive director of a place called Congregations for Kids. It's out in Charlotte, and they're doing amazing work just even with the government in Charlotte there, and they have some incredible programs going on. You're just going to love hearing from her and the heart behind why she does what she does. I think that's what comes down to a lot of these episodes, is that God has just crafted your story to do amazing things. And even in hurt, things that might hurt or maybe don't make sense in the moment, God can take those things and he can, use strengths out of that to do amazing work. And so that's Nicole's story here. And yeah, I think you're going to just love hearing about her organization and what she's got going on. This is my weekly reminder to leave me a rating and review if you think about it, on iTunes or whatever app you use. That's helpful for getting the word out about a Theology of Hustle. You can also follow me on Instagram or Facebook at Theology of Hustle and on Twitter at Curry Blandford to stay up to date with everything going on. I'm also really trying hard to get weekly emails going, so you can follow my Instagram bio to email sign up. It's on the homepage of my website, curryblandford.com, if you want to get updates. It's just really, I'm going very simple, just encouragements. And so, yeah, I encourage you to sign up for that. And yeah, I hope you enjoy hearing from Nicole. All right. Well, Nicole, I can't say thanks enough for taking time and getting on the podcast with me. I'm super excited to talk.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. This is cool.
Yeah, thanks. So let's just jump off here with you kind of introducing yourself to everybody.
Sure. My name is Nicole Taylor. I currently live in Charlotte, North Carolina, husband, two kids, and a dog. I run a nonprofit called Congregations for Kids, or CFK, and we focus on supporting kids in foster care in the greater Charlotte area.
That's awesome. I love it. I can't wait to talk about that. It's a passion. So that's cool. Let's start though. Getting into where you are now was not the intention for the beginning, right?
Not at all. Not at all. Yeah. So I grew up in South Florida, Christian family, going to church. Always knew from a very, very young age, had a heart for vulnerable children. I think I tell this not to say, oh goodness, look at me. But I think I was like 9 or 10, and I remember seeing a commercial, you know, some kids on the streets of in Africa, and you could sponsor a child. And so I said to my mom, I want to use my babysitting money, which P.S. yes, I was babysitting at 10. That's so not right. And I said, I want to sponsor a child. And so I did that for a couple of years with my money at that time. But just to point out that I really feel like God placed that on my heart from a very early age. And so also always knew that I wanted to be a journalist. And so took me through high school, went to college at Florida State University, and started working in news fairly soon, and was always connected to Big Brothers Big Sisters, organizations that kind of allowed me to fulfill that in my, you know, kind of in my soul, if you will. And so became a journalist, moved sort of all around, and landed in Wilmington, North Carolina. And then shortly after that, got a job in Charlotte, North Carolina. So landed in Charlotte and met my husband here. And one of the first conversations we had on our first date was, are you cool with adopting? Because that's going to be a part of my story. I always knew that was going to be a part of my story. And so he said, sure, yeah, why not? And then fast forward, gosh, you know, however many years later, it came to fruition. Like, okay, now's the time to talk about it. We had two children. My son now is 10 and my daughter just turned 8 yesterday. So I think my daughter at that time was about 4. Okay. And we started talking about that. And I should mention retail ROI and Greg Busick was a huge sort of part of a gap that I'd love to fill in. So prior to me quitting TV news, because it's a difficult career. If you can just only imagine. And so I was a couple of years into being married to my husband, Josh, and decided to leave the news business and began working for a not-for-profit trade association. Kind of really boring stuff, honestly, but it was a way for me to parlay my skills into like a normal person's job. Sure. And that's when I met Greg Busick. He runs Retail ROI. And initially it started as seeing the need, you know, feet on the street organizations around the world that he was connected to. And we were able, I kind of jumped on board to help with storytelling and marketing and things like that. And so was able to start traveling internationally, which was just something, you know, I remember on my first trip being so profoundly changed by that. Like I knew, you know, God had called me in to work with vulnerable children and just to have that experience, things that I had only read and seen on television, but to be there. I went to Zambia on my first trip. And so Greg really was instrumental in connecting me to so many people that were doing this work. So was doing that for quite some time. And then fast forward to where I left off. My youngest was about 4, 4 and a half. And I said to my husband, okay, now's the time to start this adoption talk and, you know, domestic, international. And I had so many connections from Retail ROI. I was calling people and having coffee meetings and just trying to see what, you know, it was sort of my year of research. Mm-hmm. And once I came to the end of that year, I sat down with my husband and I said, okay, so we're looking at about 40, 50,000. And my husband looked at me like I had 5 heads. And needless to say, that conversation didn't end the way I had hoped. And Curry, with you adopting you could probably relate to this. Yes, a little bit.
Very much so.
So what was interesting, and I don't often share this with non-believers because it does sound a little like hocus pocus, but this is just the truth. For the next 4 days, a complete stranger approached me and mentioned something about foster care. And wow. By that fourth person, I had never even considered it. I honestly didn't know much about it. Yeah. And by that fourth person, I welled up as this random person again is talking to me. It was a mom in my child's class and asked me to take pictures. I was doing some photography at the time, asked me to take pictures of her foster daughter. Mm. And started talking to me about foster care and my eyes welled up and she's like, are you okay? I'm like, I'm sorry. This is just so unbelievable. And so that night I came home and I Googled, you know, foster care orientation. And really we just blindly went into this, went down this journey and we had no idea, really no idea, which was probably a good thing.
Yeah, sure. Right.
Yeah. So fast forward a couple months later, my husband said, let's do this. And we went to a foster care orientation with the county agency. So we were not with a private agency, we were with the county. And it took about 9 months. Charlotte, North Carolina, Mecklenburg County, where we live, it's the largest county in North Carolina. It's pretty rigorous compared to other counties in the state, at least. So it took about 9 months. And if you know anything about foster care is all about reunification. So they talk a lot about that in the training. But they also want to know, are you open to adoption? So of course, we had these conversations, and when we received the call from our licensing worker that our license had gone through and we were officially licensed, her next words were, we have a 4-month-old for you to take today. Now, in the training, they tell you, we never give you a child that quickly. And right. So I really don't think I remember anything she said after that. About 10 minutes later, I'm like, I'm sorry, can you repeat everything you just said? Did you just ask me to take a child today? And what happened that day really sort of changed the course of everything for me and dramatically shifted my focus. So we said yes and picked our kids up from school. My husband came home. We picked our kids up from school. And by that time, it was about 5:30, 6 o'clock, met a social worker in an office that was already closed. Lights were off. We go up to the fourth floor, elevators, doors open. And there's a woman standing there with a baby in a carrier. And she said, "Here he is. Thanks so much. I gotta go pick up my kids." And I'm like, "Wait, I'm sorry. What's happening? do you want to see our IDs? What's his last name? How old is he? Has he had his vaccines?" Like, so many questions. And already being a mom and having kids, I had probably more questions than someone that had not parented before.
Sure.
And there were no answers. And so again, naively thinking, "Oh, somebody must call me tomorrow, and there's like an intake process," you know. Which that call, of course, never came. And so that night we're on our way home and our kids are in the back with Robbie, was our foster child. Our kids are in the back with Robbie and they're oohing and aahing over him. And my husband and I are like deer in headlights. Like, are we going to get pulled over? Is somebody going to arrest us? This feels illegal. This is so strange. Yeah. And so we got home and I remember it was very chaotic. It was crazy. And I can go into more detail if you want, but I remember looking at Josh that night and saying, "I cannot believe this is the United States of America. I cannot believe this is how this goes down. I mean, I just had no idea." And there was a lot of things that happened those first couple of weeks, but just kind of sticking to the high notes. We were told very early on this would likely be an adoption. Robbie was born with a lot of things in his system, and his parents only saw him on the day that he was born. And they were nowhere to be found. They were addicts and there was no family for him. And so they said very early on, "We don't normally say this, but this is likely going to be an adoption." And in fact, in our second court hearing, the judge asked us to stand, which for any of you foster parents out there, that never happens. The foster parents are really kind of the lowest people on the lowest people in that courtroom, if you will. And he said, "You know, I want this baby to have permanency. I don't mean to put pressure on you guys, but are you willing to adopt him? Because that's the direction that we're taking this case." Again, super rare. So yeah. Our hearts really sunk into that. Your heart, I think, responds to that differently than knowing, oh, they're still looking for family. And so, you know, I mean, he was ours from very early on. I mean, our kids, it wasn't even a question. I remember like day three, I was in Target and a woman came up and said to my daughter, "Oh, your little brother's so cute." And she said, "Yeah, he's so cute." You know, didn't even, "Oh, he's not my brother." And it was just very natural. And my husband was concerned, you know, "I don't know if I can love this child the way I love our own." And I mean, within 2 weeks, it was like, "I can't believe I said that." You know, I mean, it was just very natural.
Yeah.
And then about, I think it was about 5 months later, four and a half months later, we're just kind of eating dinner as a family, hanging out. And I got a text message from Robbie's social worker, and it said, "An aunt and uncle have just come forward and they're so excited to take him." And I know that this has happened to people who've had kids for years. For us, it was devastating. Yeah. And it was completely just came out of left field, shocking, heartbreaking, all of the things that you would think. And, you know, when I tell this story, I always feel like I have to justify my feelings because, oh, you only had him for 5 months, but there's a lot that happens with a baby between 4 months and a year. So it was devastating. But this is really where things for me changed me profoundly. We met the aunt and uncle who were so gracious to us, and just they just couldn't have been kinder. And we figured out very early on, the aunt and myself, that no matter what, we were going to work towards this child and we were going to get him out of the system. And whether he stayed with us or went with them, there was some mistakes made along the way with the social worker. And so the father, biological father's paternity wasn't proven at that point. So we didn't know if they were really family or if they weren't. And so there was 2 months where we just sat and waited. Is he going to stay? Is he going to go? That was probably the most difficult part of the whole thing.
Sure.
Is, you know, during the day, just pretending like we're getting through our day. I'm taking care of my kids. And at night, I would stay up and cry 4 hours every night. And I think my husband and I were processing it differently. And it was a very difficult time. And towards the end, you know, there was a lot of mistakes made with DSS, unfortunately, with the social worker. But towards the end, I really, the aunt and I had made every effort to create a relationship. And so I remember, you know, the first time I invited her to my house, he wouldn't reach for her. And then, you know, a month and a half later, he would. And just to see the progression of their relationship and the progression of our relationship, it was beautiful and it was heartbreaking. And so ultimately we found out that they were in fact family, and we had done the work over those 2 months to really create the relationship that, you know, we really didn't need any moderators or DSS to be involved. The transition was fairly smooth from a practicality standpoint. From an emotional standpoint, it was certainly difficult. I always get a lot of questions about that, but from a spiritual sense, I was so broken by that, could not hardly process it, but I had such peace in my heart. And it's such a bizarre thing to try to explain. And I remember one night I was really, really upset. And again, it was, you know, 2, 3 in the morning, and that's just how I would process. And I just remember this, you know, when people say, you know, God spoke to me, and I kind of never really knew what that meant. I'm like, right. Well, did you actually hear him, or how does that work? And for the best way I can describe it is God spoke to me. And the words that came to me were, it is not about you. And it was not about me. It wasn't about us. It was about being a safe place for this boy, no matter how long we had him.
Right.
And that really changed everything. And so I, once Robbie left, you know, it was probably 3 or 4 months where it was a lot of writing, a lot of praying, a lot of just trying to get my family back to a sense of wholeness and making sure my kids were okay. And my husband and I, again, grieved differently. But very quickly throughout that process of sort of grieving and kind of getting things back together again, I felt this, you need to share this. People need to know that this is happening in our city, not the brokenness that we felt by him leaving, but just how he even came into care in the first place and sort of how DSS works and all of that. And so I was on staff at my church at the time. And after about, like I said, 3 or 4 months, and I will say the church that I'm a part of was they did not have programming. It was you're in a community group, and that's what we do here, and we don't really do anything else. And so I had a whole sort of dissertation ready to talk to my pastor about, and I walked in there, and I was ready to kind of fight for, like, we need to create a ministry here. We need to tell people about this. And I think I was like 2 minutes in. He's like, absolutely, 100%, yes. So
That's cool.
So, you know, that started us really being able to talk about, to talk about our experience. And I really had a heart to walk with other people that wanted to walk that journey. And by the way, there's not a lot of people that want to walk that journey, which is fine. But I believe everyone can do something. And so we really, that kind of started, I started on a journey of walking with people within our church and really just advocating. And I guess it was about 4 months after that, January of 2018, would that be right? Yes, 2018. There was an organization, it was called Congregations for Kids, and they were starting a new program and really trying to become their own nonprofit. And really what it was trying to unite the church in transforming lives of vulnerable children. And so it was the bridge between DSS and the church. And I did not want this job. They were looking for an executive director. I did not want it. But I really felt, again, that like juxtaposed position of, I don't want this, but I feel like God's leading me here and I need to continue down this road. And so long story short, I was offered the job and I said yes. And about a week in, not even a week in, I had done nonprofit work before from a leadership standpoint. So you know, it's an uphill battle, especially when you have, you know, a small team. So, you know, here we are a year and a half later, and we've just made some amazing strides, and it's been, you know, only God moments that I've been able to witness. And so the work is hard. What's happening in our city, the brokenness and just the darkness is devastating. However, there is so much only God moments that I get to witness that keep me going in this work. There is a verse, Psalm 68:5, I believe, and it talks about this is where God dwells, you know, a father of the orphans, a protector of the widows, that's God in his holy dwelling. And that is kind of our guiding verse, because this work is hard, but I guarantee you, you will see only God moments in this work. And so I think a lot of the times when we speak in churches and in different faith groups and organizations, there are some pastors that will take the stance of, you know, this is, we are biblically mandated to do this work. And it's more of a, you know, this is our responsibility, which I do agree with. But I like to take the approach of, you know, this is exciting and like, it's scary, but you're going to experience God in a new way. And that verse just really encapsulates that for me. So.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's a crazy story. Yeah. Cause there's this reunification is so important, right? And the whole system's built around that. And like your story so amazingly shows like how reunification can be important, but like loving these kids is important at the same time. And like this, there's like such a push pull with all of this stuff, right?
Yeah, I just left a meeting a little bit ago with a woman who really wants to, her and her family want to expand their family and they want to adopt through foster care. And I said, well, there's some teenagers right now. I mean, there's several teenagers right now. There's about 65 in Mecklenburg County right now today who need a home. And she's looking for a younger child. And, you know, I just don't know if foster care is the best way, because I can't tell you that that's going to happen. Right. It is a roller coaster. Not that adoption, straight adoption is not a roller coaster, because I know that is too. But there's so many more variables with foster care because of this, you know, reunifications and, you know, and honestly, it takes a person, who understands the importance of supporting the biological family as well. And, you know, to be informed about trauma, and even kids who are traumatized by their biological parents still have a desire to be with them. Which is just a whole other fascinating concept to think about.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it's very tricky. There's no straight lines with the foster care and adoption community. And I think you know, when parents come into the, you know, like this meeting, when a parent comes in thinking like, "Hey, I'm fostering to adopt this, you know, 1 year old or whatever," you know, there can be sabotage of the biological parents, or you know, it gets real messy real fast. So.
Oh yes.
as you well know. So,
oh yes.
I love seeing how God's, I mean, just like God puts passions and burdens on you. And then like all of a sudden you're doing something crazy that you never thought you would ever do. It's awesome how he can work that, you know?
It really is. Yeah. I mean, and I remember a moment I sort of recognize that and look back. I'm like, oh wait, did all of that lead to this? And totally does know what he's doing.
That's amazing. In the moments where you realize that that's true, it super sucks in the moments where like it seems like God has no idea what he's doing, right?
And I've said this for a long time. I feel like God redeemed our brokenness so much earlier than he had to. I mean, just making things clear, at least to me, and giving me the opportunity where I really have this desire to walk with others, and giving me that opportunity. I'll be honest, you can burn out of nonprofit work very easily.
For sure.
And back in about, it was April, I went to CAFO, Christian Alliance for Orphans.
Oh,
Conference.
Yeah. I was at CAFO as well.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, I've been going probably for the past 5 or 6 years. And that was a time where I was, I was complaining and feeling so burdened by everything that we were trying to do as an organization. And I kind of woke up at CAFO. It was such a good refresher for me. Like, oh, wait, I get to do this. Like,
right.
You know, how dare I complain about it? I get to do this and get to be a part of God's work. Really.
That's cool. I love it. That's good stuff. So let's talk just a little bit about the organization then. So what is it exactly y'all are doing?
Sure. So Congregations for Kids, we have an official agreement partnership with Mecklenburg County Department of Social Services. And what we do is we work as a bridge ministry, a bridge organization, and we connect churches, groups, and individuals to support foster children. And we do that through four ways. We primarily, overarchingly, what we want to do is make sure each child in the system has a strong support system. So whatever that looks like, we focus on relational support. And so our four pathways of involvement, the first one is foster. It's easy and it's hard. It's recruiting foster parents. Right. And so we partner with the county to do that in a way where we can be a part of it and make it easier for parents. So we do MAP training here in North Carolina, which is an intense 6-week course. We provide meals and childcare and bring some spiritual elements into that. And we hold it not at the county building, and we just try to make it where we're really walking along with these families. And so this year, so far, we've been able to recruit 39 people, which again, only God, because I was like, oh, if we get like 5, I'll be excited.
Right.
And we have one more training to go before the year's out. And then the second pathway is mentor. We have a mentorship program. It's called Weekend Miracles. Mm-hmm. And it is from an organization called KidSave out in LA. And what happened was our DSS leadership here in Mecklenburg County saw this program about three and a half years ago. And they loved it so much, they bought the program, came back to Charlotte and gifted it to CFK and said, we want you to facilitate this. We want you to target the faith community. And it's a mentorship program. It's a little bit different than most. It's for kids ages 9 to 19. Most of these kids are on the trajectory to age out. And it is a once a month fun event. It's for 2 hours. We bring trained mentors, bring the kids. The kids are in the driver's seat completely with how the event goes, but it's usually somewhere really fun in the city. We have a great meal. It starts off with a little bit sort of speed dating. That's a terrible analogy, but everybody gets what that is. Kind of get to know everyone. We have a fun activity, a great meal, and they have free time at the end to kind of reconnect with conversations they may have started. Mm-hmm. And the kids are surveyed at the end and they find out, and we find out who they connected with. And so that next event will strategically kind of set them up to be together. And so after 3 or 4 months, we start to see as organic as possible, these relationships grow. And what we're finding is these are the relationships that are going to last versus, you know, you show up, I'm going to pair you together and okay, good luck, you know, and there may not be any chemistry there. And so matches take about 6 to 9 months on average, which is a long time. But again, these relationships are lasting. And so what we're seeing with our mentor matches that we have so far is these mentors are advocating for these kids at school. They're giving foster parents a break. They're going on vacation. They're seeing these kids at least once a week. They're real solid support systems. And so that's what we're hoping for. We ultimately hope these kids get adopted. But the ones that have been matched thus far, I can tell you, even if they age out, I know they're going to be okay because of the mentors that they have. Our third pathway of involvement is serve. So we do several events with DSS alongside DSS or DSS, where we're creating opportunities for volunteers to, you know, back to school events, giving out backpacks and different life skill trainings and things of that nature. So we do those events throughout the year. And then the fourth pathway is give, right? Everybody wants the chance to give. So we want to make sure people have that opportunity. Totally. So in-kind donations and financial donations, we primarily are funded through churches, which I was reading a book the other day and it said, if your nonprofit budget is solely based on church giving and one big fundraiser, you're going to fail. And currently that's our operating model. So again, we're just walking in faith here, but yes. So we have, there's about 1,000 churches within the city limits of Charlotte.
Wow.
And there's about 600 kids in foster care. And there's about 52 that are free and clear for adoption right now. So if you look at the numbers, it doesn't make sense. if we can do a good job educating and advocating, this is a problem that we can actually see a solution to. And I don't mean keeping kids out of foster care, because at the end of the day, families are always going to be in crisis.
Yeah.
But we can have a stable, good family ready and willing to be a safe place for that child when they come into care. Yeah. We can have, we can have significant sort of growth in that area, where some of the other problems that we're seeing, affordable housing and things like that, we know that this is going to take, unfortunately, generations to see right. kind of the needle move. This is not one of those issues.
Yeah.
Right. So we're, you know, I say all the time, I hope I work myself right out of a job. That would be totally fine with me.
Yeah. Well, like you say, seeing the needle move with bigger issues will probably work itself out better if you can get sort of this right, like kids in foster care and like giving them safe places to be. I mean, that's prepping the next generation to live a different sort of lifestyle, right?
Absolutely. And I'll often get the question, well, why are there so many kids coming into care? And I'm like, listen, we can go upstream, and there's organizations that are doing the upstream work. We are in crisis mode always. This is right now, we're coming to the crisis, and I'd love to be able to think, we partner with Safe Families here in Charlotte a couple of other organizations that are really trying to get ahead of that. But the truth of the matter is we have kids in care right now that we're trying to find safe support systems for. And that's kind of the lane we stay in.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. I love it. It's good stuff. I feel like your work with the county government, like the foster care, is like unprecedented from sort of what people I've talked to from all over the country.
So CFK is considered a bridge organization. And so when I first started, I got connected to Project 127, which is a network of bridge organizations. And I remember kind of the first meeting of the executive directors, and everybody's going around, and I'm like, yeah, we have a, MOU with the county agency. And everyone's like, wait, what? And I'm like, doesn't everybody have that?
Right.
And so again, totally naive to that, but no, I mean, it's something to certainly honor. It's not easy. The church and the county could not be more different.
Yeah.
And I will be transparent in saying they're both very difficult to work with.
Yeah, totally. No, I think that's, I think that's very fair, and just for different reasons, right?
For different reasons. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
That's interesting. So I want to give you just I want to give you some time to jump on your soapbox, like get on your soapbox. Like, what do you say when you go to churches about like this issue?
Well, I had a dear friend a couple months ago. I was speaking at a large event, and it was a really big deal for us. I think there was about, 1,500, 2,000 people there. And she said, I want to be honest with you. You are so quick to kind of tell people about the problem and then quickly tell them everyone can do something and get them plugged in. I'm like, yeah. But she said, people are so shocked by what you're saying, and they're shocked about what's happening. They need time to kind of settle with it and think about it. And so you got to slow that down. And it was such an eye-opening thing for me, because I am impatient. I feel like this is not hard to, like, why are we taking so long to figure this out? But I say this all the time, in our country, it's really hard to help kids in care. It's much easier to help kids in other countries.
Yeah, right.
That's just a fact. Yeah. But what we do in our country is we fiercely protect these kids in foster care, so much so that they've become invisible, so much so that people don't even know their stories. Now, don't misunderstand me. We absolutely need to protect their identities.
Sure.
But, we have a campaign. It's called Do You See Me, Charlotte, where we share like a 2-sentence story of how a kid's coming into care. It doesn't reveal anything about the child, but we share their age, if they're, their gender, and how they came into care. And so we share these stories often on our social media and when we speak. And in fact, one of the things that I'll do is I'll take a bunch of stories from like the past 6 months. We'll put them in little envelopes, and I'll start off, give everyone, hey, share this, take the next 60 seconds, read it, share it with the person next to you. They say, all of these stories happened in the past 6 months in our city. And you can hear a verbal like gasp. Yeah, people just can't even believe it.
Yeah.
And so I've talked to pastors of huge churches here in Charlotte, and they have debated with me that the things that we're talking about have actually happened in Charlotte. And so that tells me that we just need to focus more on the advocacy piece, on the education piece. And I also think, whereas other ministries and nonprofits, it's very easy to show you what the homeless population looks like. And you can visibly see this. Yeah. I cannot show you a foster child. Any yeah. foster child that I'm showing you is a child actor or someone right, that is yeah. pretending to be a foster child. I can't legally show you a kid that is currently in foster care unless they're legally up for adoption. So that's tricky from that standpoint. I really, you know, one of my skill sets that I'm passionate about is storytelling. And so I feel like all of the, you know, news and all of the storytelling I did in the first part of my career has really been able to help me with CFK because we have to get the story out there. And so, you know, people want, well, why didn't I see that on the news? Why didn't I see it on social media? Because you can't, you won't, right. you will not. Yeah. We sat down with the director of DSS about a year and a half ago, and the biggest challenge other than kids coming into care was social work turnover. And so we started a program called Socialite, Be a Light to a Social Worker in the City. And really, it's just adopt a social worker. We give people very specific ways on how they can support social workers. But that's another thing, another sort of education piece. People are like, well, okay, there was a 69% turnover last year with the social workers in Mecklenburg County. How does that affect a child? Let me explain how that affects right. a child. You know, this is the child's only advocate. They know all the pieces. And as soon as they're gone, this child starts over. It delays them finding permanency for months, years, or they may never find permanency.
Right.
And so there's definitely this education piece, and it's not your typical like, hey, come be a mentor. There's so much red tape around foster kids that it's not an easy entry like some of the other nonprofits. And so when I go to churches and when we start working with our outreach ministries, I think what is challenging and what can quite honestly be frustrating is, you know, people want, hey, I'd love a serve event where the whole family can come in and we can serve. And at first I was spinning my wheels trying to create those. And I just had to say, you know what? That's not us. We cannot have your teenage kids come to an event with these teenage foster kids, because right. what if they recognize them? We yeah. just can't take the chance. So your family cannot come and serve with us. You have to be at least 21 to serve with us. So that was, you know, it's hard to say no, especially when you're a young nonprofit. yeah. It's really, right. really hard to do that. Yeah. And so, you know, and it's on me really to educate those that are not familiar with foster care of here's what's actually helpful. And that I've noticed that it's been frustrating, but also it's just because people just don't know. And it just goes to show that education and awareness piece is just as important, if not more important, than getting people plugged in on the other side.
Right. Yeah. That's good stuff. I think, yeah, you're right. Cause I feel like if you can make the case for these kids, right, that Christians like have the Holy Spirit. I mean, like you are going to be convicted if you can be sort of, I don't know, maybe even convinced that like this is a real issue and that these are real people. And yeah, it's good. It's good stuff.
And we take the, you know, the Jason Johnson, you know, mantra of everyone can do something, because trust me, I'm not out there trying to convince people to be foster parents, because if it's not something that's been in your heart, it's not going to work out.
Yeah.
But you could wrap around a foster family. You could support a foster family. You could, you know, give in many other ways. You know, there really is an opportunity for everyone. It's just it's a slow build where I just want to be there.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, for sure. What about, like on a personal level, just be, you know, going from your, you know, vocational history and, becoming an executive director, what has that like transition been for you? Like just personally?
Yeah, it's really been, interesting in the sense of, a lot of personal growth. You know, I think everything that I did before this has given me the skills to do this job. But I think from on a personal level, you know, sort of seeing and hearing the stories so much more, you know, on a daily basis of kids and kind of brokenness and things that are happening with families. You know, I've really spent probably the past 4 or 5 months trying to figure out how to make my family a priority. Where for a very long time, especially in the beginning, oh, my kids are fine. Like they have loving parents. They're fine. They've got a, right. you know, a house. They're good. Not that I was ignoring my kids,
right.
but, I was trying to do everything. Yeah. I was trying to do everything for you know, where I really see a need and what I'm passionate about. And so trying to recalibrate on a personal level, I'm definitely in that season of let's keep the most important thing the most important thing. And yeah, that can be challenging.
Hey, totally. I mean, I feel like we're all there, but you add the level of like a nonprofit and you're like pouring into children who are vulnerable. I mean, like it just gets, it's so easy to just pour yourself out completely to something like that, you know, when it's such a burden. So
absolutely. Yeah. Yes. And you know, I want us to sustain and I want to be a good leader and I want to do quality work in whatever we're doing. So just trying to figure out how to not make everything a priority, because that's what I tend to do. And that's not helpful.
Yeah, right. Because then nothing gets accomplished.
Exactly.
Doing everything poorly.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, that's good stuff. What about the sort of learning curve, though, of like, I don't know, meeting with people, or what's the learning curve been like to like getting into this a new role?
It's certainly been interesting, and I often joke, like, I feel like I sell vulnerable kids for a living because I'm always trying to, you know, talk to people about it. And also, you know, we are a nonprofit. We're not a religious nonprofit. We're fueled by faith, right? But and we primarily interact with churches. But it's not like we're asking for your believer card when you come to an event. You know, we're here to serve everyone. And so, you know, that's been a learning curve for me is the language that I use depending on who I'm meeting with and things like, you know, who is my audience. And so that's been interesting. You know, I was on staff at my church and so I understand the church world to a certain degree. But being on the other side now, I said from the very beginning, you know, I don't like asking people for money. I don't like asking people for anything. So it's ironic that is my actual job now. But I have never once to this day, which this is probably going to have to change soon, have I sat down and asked someone for money. Not one time. And I really feel like it was kind of this agreement with me and God, like, hey, I'm going to do this work. Just provide. And he has, to where I haven't had to ask for it because I find that incredibly uncomfortable. I'm not good at it. And, hopefully, he's growing me in that way, because I'm sure a time is coming very soon where that will have to happen. Sure. I think that's probably been, you know, the biggest, you know, learning curve for me, the fundraising part of things and asking people for things and reminding myself that people want the opportunity to step in different ways. I'm not trying to, you know, be the hamster on the wheel doing everything. And I think the more I step out in faith, the more, you know, God just shows up and, you know, in people, in church partnerships, business partnerships. So that's been just so, again, just kind of only God moments is what I call them. As far as, you know, administratively and running an organization, I was the acting COO at the organization where I met Greg Busick and running and helping out with retail ROIs. So I really feel like God used that time to prepare me. And again, it's just fascinating to look back and be like, oh my gosh, maybe that was for this. Yeah. I look back even at my news experience and, you know, literally seeing trauma every day. And maybe that was to help me sort of toughen up and be able to kind of be in this work without, you know, breaking down every day. So I look at those things and wonder, gosh, was this all part of the journey? And so far it seems like it very well could be.
That's cool. Yeah. I love when God does that stuff. So, it's good stuff. What about from like a spiritual perspective? I feel like it can be easy to sort of, couch your Christianity like solely in maybe like the good works, the organization. Like, what has that done for your life, like spiritually?
You know, that time, it was about 2.5 years ago where we transitioned Robbie back to his aunt and uncle. I think during that time, it was such tremendous spiritual growth for me. You know, I had always, you know, there was just so many things that happened that it was a tremendous faith growing experience for me. And so I feel like I'm kind of at, you know, I don't want to say like another level, but another level of faith for me where, you know, I don't even really have to think about it. I just act in it. But I'll be honest, I do think that sometimes I can substitute the things that I'm doing throughout my day as what I would say is building my relationship, but I'm not having that one-on-one time and that quiet Sure. time consistently, like I know that I need to be doing to help sustain the work that I'm doing. I am very much the kind of person that finds my worth in my work. And I know that I should not, sure. I know yeah. that's not where I find my worth, but I do. And so I have to be careful about that. And so, definitely just at a different stage of growing spiritually, and trying to be reminded of that daily.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good. Well, are you ready to jump into our final two questions?
Yes, I'm ready.
Okay. So my first question is, what is the strangest job that you have ever had?
Okay. The strangest job that I have ever had, you know, news was really strange. I mean, really strange and in funny ways and really strange and very uncomfortable, sad ways. Yeah. I don't watch, television news. I haven't in years. It's a really tough business, but, I have several interesting stories from news, and you just never knew what you were going to get. Each day it was something different. And I remember one time, several times, you know, tragic things would happen and you'd have to go knock on the family's door and ask them how they felt about it. I mean, it's a horrible, yeah. I mean, I feel like my soul turned black when I remember those times. Sure. Right. But then, you know, really just, you know, crazy, you know, funny things. So I would say news was probably the weirdest job I've ever had. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. That's a world. So
it is.
Yeah, right. So finally then, what is one piece of advice that you would give to somebody looking to bring God's kingdom more into their work?
I think the best advice, I'm not one to give advice, but, just be who you are and show people. I think a lot of times people think they, I'm not a fan of ministering to people through, you know, beating them over the head with Bible verses and things like that. I think it can be so off-putting for non-believers. I think even the word Christian sometimes is off-putting because there's been a couple of things out there that have given us a bad name. But I think living your life in a way that I say to my kids every day, what are you going to do today? And they said, we're going to be a light. Be a light. Make people want to look at you and say, gosh, they're different. I just really want to be around them. Why are they different? Show yeah. people. You don't have to, you know, invite them to church every Sunday. If you're not at that level yet, that can be off-putting. And so just, you know, bringing people to you, with the way that you live your life. I hope when I'm old, you know, that I would hope that somebody says that about me, that somebody says, she just lived her life differently.
Yeah. That's awesome. I love it. I think that's, yeah, something we all need to remember every day, right? So it's good stuff. All right. Well, Nicole, thanks so much. This was awesome. So such good stuff.
Thank you.
Great to talk. So
grateful for the podcast. It's great to hear other people's stories. So I'm just really grateful. Thank you.
I appreciate that. Thanks. Well, I hope you enjoyed hearing from Nicole. I encourage you to go check out Congregations for Kids and what they've got going on there. I think it's important work, and just cool hearing how God uses our story in so many amazing ways. And so I hope that encourages you if you're at a place where you don't really know what's going on and are struggling even in your vocation, that God is using your story, and he will use it to do amazing things. So take that encouragement. And until next time, get out there and hustle.